Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, September 3rd, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. State Bar investigating Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador for failing to represent Idaho health and welfare as required by Idaho law. Unclear how long it'll take for salmon to return to the Klamath River after dam breaching in southwestern Oregon. And Moscow City Council to take up a zoning administrator appeal of decision to allow Christ Church-affiliated New St. Andrews College to expand in downtown Moscow, apparently in violation of city zoning law. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Washington Superintendent of Public Instruction Chris Reichdahl says school districts in the state should update policies for student use of cell phones during instructional time. Reichdahl's Office of the State Superintendent published guidance last week which said reducing the use of cell phones in class improves concentration and learning, improves mental and physical health, and reduces pressures caused by social media. According to the spokesman review, Reichdahl said districts should adopt uniform policies rather than allowing individual teachers to set their own policies. Reichdahl cited a district-wide policy for Reardon Edwall Schools, which says cell phones must be kept in a locker or cubby during the entire school day, except for high school students who can use their phones during lunchtime and during a morning break. Parents who wish to reach a student must call the school office with a message. The state superintendent's guidance document quotes Reardon Superintendent Eric Sabata, who said of the one-year-old policy at his school district, truthfully, it went way better than I thought it would last year. It has not gone perfectly, but it did go well, and we are continuing our stance going into the 2024 to 2025 school year. As the saying goes, now that we know better, we need to do better. Last week, Spokane Public Schools passed a district-wide cell phone policy which bans their use in classrooms. The Spokane policy allows high school students to use their cell phones between classes and at lunch. Students in the district can carry their phones, but they must be kept out of sight. The Wolf Lodge Inn Steakhouse, a popular restaurant in the Coeur d'Alene area for decades, burned down yesterday afternoon. Kootenai County Fire Chief Christopher Way said firefighters were alerted to an attic and chimney fire shortly after noon. 11 fire agencies responded to the four-alarm fire. Way said by the time the fire was contained at 2:44 p.m., the Northern Idaho Steakhouse had been leveled. Though nearby buildings were undamaged by the fire, Way said the cause of the fire remains under investigation and will be headed by the state fire marshal's office. The Idaho State Bar started a series of ethics investigations of Attorney General Raul Labrador after former Health and Welfare Department Director Dave Jeppesen filed ethics complaints last year. The investigations came to light recently after Jeppesen shared copies of his complaints with the Idaho Statesman and the Idaho Capital Sun. The Idaho Capital Sun reports the Idaho State Bar would not confirm there are ongoing investigations, saying under their rules, investigations are confidential. Jeppesen's complaints say while he was head of the Health and Welfare Department, Labrador's adversarial representation against the department made it clear he did not view the department as his client, even though Idaho law stipulates the Attorney General's office is required to represent state agencies in legal action. Shortly after Labrador took office in January 2023, he initiated an investigation of the Health Department's implementation of federal community partner grants, which helped deal with learning loss caused by the COVID pandemic, saying the health department did not limit the grants to serving children between the ages of 5 and 13, as the legislature had required. The health department sued the attorney general's office over the investigative demands, and an Ada County judge ruled Attorney General Labrador had a notable conflict of interest and ordered Labrador to appoint a special prosecutor to enforce the investigative demands. A separate audit by legislative staff found 30% of the grant recipients planned to use the federal money for children outside of the age group the legislature specified. Also last year, Labrador fired longtime Deputy Attorney General Daphne Huang shortly after she raised concerns Labrador was forcing his office's attorneys to take positions hostile to the Department of Health and Welfare, which is the Attorney General's client. There was also an exodus of attorneys whose job was to represent the Health and Welfare Department about 2 months after Labrador took the Attorney General's office. Huang sued Labrador last year. Jeppesen's complaint said the health department did not have adequate legal representation, and there were concerns that attorney-client privileged information would not be kept confidential or used against health department employees even. His complaint says conflicts with the Attorney General's office strained health department operations and created, quote, a hostile situation where trust and confidence has been destroyed. The Idaho Capital Sun reports the Idaho State Bar sent a letter to Attorney General Labrador July 22nd asking for a reply to Jeppesen's allegation and sent another letter on the same day to former Idaho Office of the Attorney General Civil and Constitutional Defense Division Chief Lincoln Davis Wilson asking for Wilson's response to a separate complaint from Jeppesen. Wilson is currently working for the far-right Christian nationalist law firm Alliance Defending Freedom, which has offered to represent the state of Idaho in litigation. The Alliance Defending Freedom wants to criminalize homosexual acts between consenting adults and claims what they call the homosexual agenda will destroy Christian America. Attorney General's Office spokesperson Dan Estes criticized Jeppesen for sending his complaint documents to the media. Estes said the bar's grievance process is confidential in order to protect attorneys from meritless claims being aired out in public. The leaking of this frivolous and baseless complaint to the media is an attempt to thwart a fair and objective process and is proof that it was intended as a political hit. He said Jeppesen disrespected the confidential process, and that says more about his character and motives than the complaint does. The Moscow City Council tonight will consider an appeal by the city's zoning administrator of a zoning board of adjustment decision concerning the use of the downtown building at 5th and Main that previously housed the Moscow Contemporary Art Gallery nonprofit, but is now occupied by New St. Andrews College after the owners of the building kicked Moscow Contemporary out. In February, one of the owners of the building, Brenda von Wandruska, asked city officials to determine whether New St. Andrews College's plan for housing their administrative offices in the art gallery space complies with city zoning code that prohibits the expansion of educational institutions downtown without a conditional use permit from the city. The city adopted a zoning law against expanding educational institutions in the Central Business District in order to preserve the retail and service character of that part of the city, and so the adjacent rows of retail would not be broken up too much by educational institutions. The city's zoning administrator, Cody Riddle, determined on February 21st New St. Andrews' proposed use of the building at 414 South Main Street as administrative offices for the college would not be permissible under city zoning code. The Zoning Board of Adjustment reversed the zoning administrator's decision on June 18th, and 11 days later, Riddle appealed the Zoning Board of Adjustment's decision to the city council. New St. Andrews College is also proposing to use the space as the college's welcoming center and as an art gallery. The city council will hear the zoning administrator's appeal at their meeting tonight. Zoning Administrator Cody Riddle wrote The Board of Adjustment, quote, arbitrarily found the proposed NSA administrative offices on the second floor of the building do not constitute an expansion of the college. Riddle said the board did not cite specific evidence in making their decision, nor did they refer to information in the record that supported their decision. New St. Andrews says on their website the city's refusal to allow them to use the space for college administrative offices is discriminatory because the previous tenant, Moscow Contemporary, had offices in the space. However, the offices were for administration of the art gallery, unlike New St. Andrews' proposal, which would expand the educational institution downtown by using the space for administrative offices for the entire college. The nonprofit Moscow Contemporary, whose director is Roger Rowley, took over the UI Pritchard Art Gallery space in 2021 from the University of Idaho, which had decided not to renew Rowley's contract. The building owners kicked Moscow Contemporary out at the end of January this year. One person replied to the Moscow Report Facebook page, a page that champions Christchurch and New St. Andrews, by writing, "Previous occupant, art gallery on the ground and second floors, welcome center, one office serving the gallery. NSA proposed use, art gallery on the ground floor, welcome center, office presumably serving the gallery, plus conversion of upstairs gallery into additional offices which serve NSA, not the gallery. That is the difference that you are omitting in your case. These additional offices are the only portions being contested, and they are the difference between previous and proposed. The art gallery, welcome center, and office serving the gallery are not being challenged. If UI still owned that space and wanted to convert the upstairs gallery space into UI offices, that would not be permitted under zoning code either, which applies equally to all K-12 colleges, universities. No discrimination. Other agenda items for tonight's Moscow City Council meeting include selling $4.3 million in bonds to the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality through the state's revolving loan fund program. The city originally got the money from the Department of Environmental Quality through the revolving loan fund for the completion of several construction projects, which are now finished. The city now wants to convert the construction funding to permanent bond financing. The bonds would have 20-year terms and an interest rate of 2.25%. The council will also vote on changing the title of the job of city supervisor to city administrator. The council is not considering any changes to the job's duties. The Moscow City Council will meet tonight at 7 p.m. at City Hall. The nonprofit art gallery Moscow Contemporary has secured a new space at the Palouse Mall. Director Roger Rowley said the gallery plans to reopen later this month and plans to bring artwork in as soon as construction is complete. The owners of Moscow Contemporary's former space on Main Street downtown terminated the nonprofit's lease in January. The gallery's board has been searching for a new place to showcase art exhibits, Rowley said. Not having a gallery for almost 9 months has been stressful, and we're anxious to please longtime supporters and attract new ones. The new space will show the public that we are active and making progress and back to doing great things. Rowley told the Daily News the Palouse Mall space, which used to be Rue 21, appealed to him because of its high ceiling, track lighting, a glass storefront, and the right kind of wall to showcase artwork. Rowley said he is excited about Moscow Contemporary's future and believes the mall could bring the gallery a whole new audience to support what they do. Rowley said there will be curious people passing by the storefront who will be able to see the art and freely walk into the gallery and check it out. He said Moscow Contemporary's art education programs that were temporarily moved to the 1912 Center after they were kicked out of their space at 5th and Main will also be brought into the mall. Rowley said, "Our ambition is to bring in the best art possible. The first exhibit will feature artwork from Gonzaga University art professor Reynaldo Gil Zambrano. In other news, Moscow Contemporary recently received an $8,000 fast-track grant from the Lewis Clark Valley Healthcare Foundation for the gallery's new Dance for Parkinson's Plus program. The program is co-facilitated with choreographer Corey Beaufort in partnership with the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation. The Dance for Parkinson's Plus program, which began this summer, will continue with a fall session starting Tuesday of next week at the gallery's new space.
A program in Idaho is aiming to close the teacher shortage gap by training people where they live. Idaho State University's Paraprofessional to Certified Teacher program trains assistants or paraprofessionals who are already in the classroom to earn bachelor's degrees and become teachers. The course takes place online, meaning students can be anywhere in the state. Corey Bennett is the department chair of teaching and educational studies at ISU's College of Education. He says the program's flexibility is part of its appeal.
A lot of these people are in districts or in schools, and they have no intention of leaving. This is where home is. This is where their families are. And so we're helping them find ways to grow within that community and continue to serve and support their communities by becoming a teacher.
The program has expanded since its first cohort 3 years ago, when it was in one school district. Its third cohort is located in 15 school districts, and Bennett says there's a growing wait list of districts that want to be included. They're exploring how to further grow the program. Emma Wood is Assistant Dean of Educator Preparation at ISU's College of Education. She says another important part of the program is that it's designed to ensure paraprofessionals earn a degree without getting into debt. She notes that the teacher shortage is because not enough educators are in the classroom 5 years after graduating, not because the state isn't graduating enough teachers.
Our anticipation is that their retention rate is going to go up, because what we have been finding is that teacher preparation programs are graduating enough teachers, but we cannot keep up with the number of teachers that are leaving the profession.
Bennett says the program is rewarding because many of the people in the program never planned to get a college degree or even thought it was possible.
The personal effect of this and how it touches people in very meaningful ways is profound, and you can't really put words on it. You can't put a dollar amount on that, but it is quite literally changing lives.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, specializing in food, goods, and programs that nourish and nurture our community. The Moscow Food Co-op is located at 121 East 5th Street. For more information, visit moscowfood.coop, call 882-8537, or find them on Facebook. KRFP is also sponsored by
Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
It's unclear how long it will take the Klamath River to return to its original ecological state after last week's dam breaching on the Klamath River in southwestern Oregon. The removal of the remaining cofferdams next to the larger of four Klamath River dams last week started the process of restoring an ecosystem with hundreds of miles of spawning grounds for Chinook salmon. The Associated Press reports there have been reports of salmon at the mouth of the river heading upstream. Yurok Tribe senior water policy analyst Michael Belchick said, "I think we're going to have some early successes. I'm pretty confident we'll see some fish going above the dam. If not this year, then for sure next year." The previous removal of the Elwha River dams in Washington may provide some indication. Klamath River Renewal Corporation Director Mark Bransom said it took about a decade before salmon runs were large enough so the Elwha Clallam tribe could begin fishing again. Bransom said, "I don't know if anybody knows with any certainty what it means for the return of fish. It'll take some time. You can't undo 100 years' worth of damage and impacts to a river system overnight." After a massive fish kill in 2002, the Yurok and Karuk tribes began a fierce campaign to remove the four dams between Lake Iwana and the city of Klamath Falls so the ecosystem that sustained them for thousands of years could return. Klamath River Renewal Corporation Public Relations Officer Ren Brownell told the publication SFGate, "We had a really incredible moment to share with tribes as we watched the final cofferdams be broken. So we've officially returned the river to its historic channel at all the dam sites, but the work continues." Brownell said workers still need to remove diversion tunnels, remnants of cofferdams, and other remaining dam infrastructure, but the river is running free once again. Brownell said the river is going to run brown with sediment for a while, but that mostly dead algae will deposit downstream and serve as a place where plant life can restore itself. Before workers finished building the first of the four dams on the Klamath River in 1918, the Klamath River had the third largest salmon spawning population in the West. Karuk Tribe Chair Russell Buster Adderby said, "Restoring hundreds of miles of spawning grounds and improving water quality will help support the return of our salmon, a healthy, sustainable food source for several tribal nations. This is truly a great day for the Karuk and all the native people in the Klamath Basin." Commercial fishing operations along the coast of southern Oregon and northern California will be helped by the restored salmon runs. Farmers and ranchers who relied on the dams to irrigate and water livestock since the first dam went in will also be impacted. Oregon State University anthropology professor Brian Tilt said, "There's a forward-looking component to the project. We've got all these different groups in the river basin who rely on water for very different purposes. And to what extent do their interests and their priorities about management overlap? And can we think about ways going forward to find management alternatives that are broadly beneficial? And what are those alternatives?" The dams also produced electricity. The Associated Press reports it was less than 2% of Pacific Corp's energy supply, or enough to power 70,000 homes. The dam removal project is expected to cost $500 million, which taxpayers and Pacific Corp power customers will pay for. Two smaller dams remain in place upstream from the four larger dams that workers breached last week. Salmon may spawn below those dams, and some are likely to use fish ladders on those dams to get to upriver spawning places.
An advocacy group in Bozeman is calling on young people and low-income renters to take on the city's notorious housing crunch. More than half of the people in Bozeman are renters. The latest Community Housing Needs Assessment shows Bozeman needs up to 6,300 housing units in the next 5 years just to keep up with job growth. Jacqueline Aaron with a group called Forward Montana says people who can least afford it are paying more than 50% of their income on rent, and even then are not living where they want to.
The units are being built out on the edges of town, sprawling into our agricultural land, getting pushed outside of the community, and I think a lot of people here really thrive in our urban center and want to be participating in the parts of community life that they value here.
Aaron says Bozeman's development codes should reflect the desire for people to be able to live closer to town, and says that was a common theme in a recent hearing. Officials will hold a work session September 17th to discuss ways to address the housing shortage within the bounds of Bozeman's existing and future ordinances. Forward Montana says 60% of the housing units in Bozeman should be priced below market value to meet the full range of community housing needs. Aaron says Bozeman's more established residents have had a large hand in shaping the town's housing ordinances, and she is encouraging young people to make their voices heard as the Bozeman City Commission considers what's next for the affordable housing ordinance.
We're missing out on this over 55% of people who are renting, and a good chunk of those are these young people that are affected.
Bozeman officials voiced support during a recent hearing for adding more than 1,600 affordable housing units in town, and there are more on the horizon. Communities now use incentives to encourage developers to build affordable housing. This is Mark Moran for Big Sky Connection.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, clear skies through Saturday with a low of 51 tonight, highs 86 tomorrow, 92 Thursday and Friday, and 94 on Saturday. Lows will be 54 degrees each night. Current temperature 75 degrees. Thanks for listening to the KRFP Evening Report. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ, there's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by Hungadunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hungadunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
KRFP supports progressive values, including multiculturalism and environmentalism.